Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Josephine Angelini. For more information and news we talk about in our show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey!
Hello, my geek kings!
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yay. All right, Peter, put down the video game. Yay. I know it's your only time.
I've got 4 minutes away from my twins.
What about the people that I play Xbox with who have the rocking the kids asleep while they're playing? You don't get to do that? Like, the kids are there just sitting next to them falling asleep?
No, you actually kind of want to be present now and again.
When you've got maybe one baby, that might make sense. Kind of hard to do that with two.
Yeah, actually, I listened to this news story, Pete, that you've got to hear. It says this guy, he's got a petition out that he wants to change the name twins, when you get twins, to two f***ing babies. Because that's what you have. Like, because he hears people come up and they're like, you know, oh yeah, I had two kids.
And that was
like,
on Radio Lab.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
When you have kids at two different developmental stages.
Yes.
Twins are two f***ing babies. So I think you should sign the petition.
I was actually listening to that guy on Radio Lab with the interview with the father of twins. Oh, This American Life.
Yeah.
And all I could think was like, wow, Peter is holding it together so much better than this guy.
Well, that guy was definitively neurotic.
This guy, oh my God, this guy was unraveling. I would just like to make a public statement at this point that I am incredible admiration for Peter.
Yeah.
The amount that you're holding it together and the fact that you're showing it up occasionally for these Geeks On recordings is just mind-blowing to me after listening to some of these people.
He puts it together and walks in and then falls apart when he gets out of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, the reason you think I'm holding it together is you're not seeing as much of me anymore. When you do see me, it's like, I actually have a moment. It's like,
Well, in case you guys don't know who we are, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Peter Gamble Robinson. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek, and as we've already established, a father of twins.
Yes.
Nine months old.
And since now apparently we're doing middle names, my name is Donald Eduardo Marshall, and I too am a geek.
Do you have to say it like that?
I do, because that's actually how it's pronounced. It's the most Edouard. Ostentatious, ridiculous middle name
Donald
ever.
Eduard.
Like, there's an umlaut over the U.
No, it's...
But it's like in 14 point, where everything else is in 8.
My entire name is about as American as you can get, except for my middle name, which apparently my parents are just like, ooh, apparently we're a little bit French now.
Like Twilight fans.
Oh.
Donald Edward Cullen Marshall.
So we have Josephine Angelini.
My shirt just fell off.
Did it?
Josephine Angelini is our guest
today.
We have a
fantastic interview with her. We will mock her shortly. But Josephine wrote a book called Starcrossed, and it's getting tons and tons and tons of amazing press. And so she's here to talk about YA and all sorts of
every time
fun
you guys
stuff.
Say that, you act like the rest of the universe knows what YA means.
Sorry,
nobody
young
knows
adult
what that unless you
science
have a kid.
Fiction.
Young adult. So if you hear the term YA during this interview, they mean young adult.
Yes,
for those non-breeders like Don and I.
Yeah. I thought she said non-breeders, and I was like, Don is a non-breeder.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
like
a term.
Don and I.
No, not reader.
Oh, breeder. Breeder, yes.
I'm wondering if Aaron understands the full connotations of that statement. But moving on.
I do know what breeders and non-breeders do mean.
Do you want to do some news or what?
Let's do some news.
All right.
I feel we should probably put in a disclaimer at this point that if you actually hear sword fighting, armies clashing, or other strange sounds in the background, Ianthi, our newest geek edition, is actually watching the end of the Game of Thrones series in the other room.
Yes, and she cannot be put off for any longer.
Which is actually a good bridge because I figured we would, you know.
Oh,
now
that, you want to touch on it? Are we going to touch on it? We should do a whole show.
We should probably, let's just,
we've already
just quickly,
done a Game of Thrones episode, for God's
so
sake. We've done multiple.
Non-spoiler version.
Yeah,
How did you guys like the series, the first season?
I'm By and large, I am very pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Very pleased. I think they...
So am I.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Through four, I was like, oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Let's move. By 7 through 10, I was freaking cheering. And every time they hit the actual dialogue from his books and like knock the scene out of the park using the dialogue from the books, I was almost in tears. And actually, the one thing that struck me more than anything was when...
Non-spoiler version just flew out.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Just gone.
Sorry.
Never mind.
So that thing that I just said. So when that happened, I was struck
beating
by...
that with my cell phone for all of our non-viewing listeners.
I was struck with the emotional connection that I didn't actually get from the book when I read that scene.
Hmm.
As much as watching him in his despair.
But in brief, I mean, the conclusion was there was some slight adjustments from the first book, but I think you have to.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple scenes that I missed that I thought were really good in the books that were not in the movie.
It's a shocking book. They got almost every
Almost everything. There was
little a petition for to extend it out to 14 episodes.
For next season?
Next season.
Yeah,
well,
I think would be very smart.
Well, what if they divide the books in half?
Well, they've already declared they're going to.
Yeah, oh, really?
I heard the writers say that they were probably going to need, because the books get big.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Clash of Kings is ginormous. Yeah. Clash of Kings is still the biggest one to date.
Yeah.
Is it? Wait, is it bigger than the third one? Yeah. I'm not sure.
No, I think they get
the
bigger.
The third one is the biggest.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway.
Anyway. So, good, enjoyed, thumbs up, generally. Yeah.
All right. I have something that's in the geek movie / TV world, so it kind of relates.
Bring it.
There was a interview with Nicholas Meyer, the director of Star Trek II and Star Trek VI, here in Los Angeles, and he specifically talked about those movies. And one of the things that isn't really important about this is that he felt bad that he kind of got in this big pissing match with Gene Roddenberry, and this was right for Star Trek II, and this was Star Trek VI, and this is right when he was getting sick, and so he kind of said, I always regret that. But the argument was about he wanted Kirk to be kind of, and other people in the Federation to be have some racist feelings toward the Klingons. If you remember in that movie, Kirk was like, I don't want to make peace with the Klingons. They killed my son. I hate them. I hate the race of Klingons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was part of the Kirk arc.
It made sense.
And part of his, you know, of course, his character arc was that he needed to get over that to, you know, move forward. But Gene Roddenberry's position was that humans are perfect in the future. And apparently, this had been an ongoing argument since day one that all the writers all the time are constantly going, oh my God, Gene Roddenberry is making it impossible to write for Star Trek.
Hmm.
Wow. And I'm wondering if you guys maybe have felt that with Star Trek, where...
Yes, I have.
That we kept hearing these things like, oh, we don't want the human characters to emote so that aliens could... be more alien. All these weird directives from Gene Roddenberry. Now, yeah, I'm a big Star Trek fan, you all know. But it is a little weird that he's kind of like, his directives were essentially taking heart and soul out of stories.
Yep. I would agree. The thing that Garrett Wang mentioned in his interview with us.
Yeah.
You can go back and listen to it in our archives.
So the more and more I think about it, I was like, I'm wondering what people in the Star Trek... I'm wondering maybe if Gene Roddenberry wasn't necessarily the steam engine behind Star Trek, and maybe the team of people
might have been
may have like somehow fought through Gene Roddenberry.
Well, there's a big difference between that 1950s sci-fi set of Asimov and Bradbury and like that, who could write incredibly pithy dialogue and everything was about the domain of the mind.
Yeah.
And you can see that effect in the early Star Treks.
But that only goes so far, and you do need a certain amount of emotional intensity to really carry a series, I think.
Well, I thought the original series, I never felt like they held back with that. I did with, like, Next Generation. I thought it was like watching walking robots.
I felt just felt like everybody on Next Generation was Captain America.
Yeah, they're all
everybody getting, was
they would never noble shed a to tear. A fault. Yeah, exactly. And I think that was a fault of the show.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it interesting. I was just wondering, maybe Gene Roddenberry was almost like a roadblock from keeping Star Trek from evolving.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I would argue that if you look at the episodes since his death, to me, that's sort of the proof. You know, they have evolved. Better. They've become deeper. They've become harder. I mean,
although Enterprise sucked.
Well,
any way you look at
it.
Well,
I would argue that the last season of Enterprise actually got very good right after everyone stopped watching.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I was off that boat.
Curious, bringing it up.
So Twitter is reportedly under federal investigation. The FTC is investigating Twitter over their treatment of third parties that build applications onto their platform. Business Insider suggests that the investigation is related to an incident involving entrepreneur Bill Gross and his company Uber Media. Gross, who invented search advertising, has been buying various Twitter startups in an apparent move to create an ad network within that ecosystem. Twitter itself has been making similar moves in the past year, buying clients like Tweety and TweetDeck, adding image capabilities to Twitter.com, and banning third-party advertisers in order to build up their own network. So they're being investigated because they're trying to block out other people.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. Twitter, the people who own Twitter, they're not making any money. I don't think they're still making a damn dime.
Well, what was the release that just came out on stock is Pandora. And it shot up. Everybody was like, ooh, new internet startup. That's awesome. And then somebody came out and literally sort of raised their hand very shyly and went, has Pandora made any money? And then everybody was like, sell.
Yeah.
And it shot back down.
Yeah, well, they're having, you know, that problem with a couple companies. And they, you know, what happened was the client was kind of, this Twitter client was out there and third-party people were making all these apps and putting ads in them,
right.
Their own apps. So everybody else was making money. Now, Twitter's trying to figure out what the hell's going on, what to do, and so I think they're trying to stop these other people from...
Well, I use a third-party application primarily to access Twitter.
Everybody does. I mean, like Twitter didn't make one. It was just like a web feed for a while. And so now Twitter's desperately, I think, trying to figure out how to lock it back down in a way, make money... And it's
how would you do it?
Well, they should have locked it down from the very beginning,
right? But that's neither here nor there. How would you do it now?
I don't know. They may have been. It may have been.
Are they now just another? Are they the equivalent of an internet? You know, I mean,
yeah, kind of. I think that they need to. But the thing is if they can't make any money, they're going to shut down, and then those 30-party people are going to be gone. So.
I wonder if they can demand revenue.
Well, I'm still curious if Twitter is going to maintain interest long term. Like, I'm sort of done with Twitter. I don't really use it much anymore. Once in a while, I'll go on and browse what other people have tweeted, and that's about it.
Well, along these lines, you know, Facebook and Google, in a weird way, compete with each other because they both do ads.
Right.
And people spend a lot of time on Facebook. Okay. Well, Google... And Google has been trying to find a way to kind of hone in on that and kind of steal some
They've wanted to launch their own social
network. Yeah.
And they've actually tried a couple different things to see if it would work. Well, the new one that they're doing is called Google Plus.
Right.
And I don't know if you guys looked at it.
I looked at some of the videos.
It's cool.
It looks great because the problem with Facebook is it's a little clunky, actually. It's like when you're looking – when you have to kind of get to know Facebook to figure out how to kind of –
Well, I think it's just a lot of it is concealed in terms of like that your privacy issues and who you're giving to what and etc.
But sometimes I'm trying to do something on Facebook or find something and it's like it's a little hard. Or like if I want to organize my people, it's like you have to drag down the list and stuff.
Such a pain in the butt.
For God's sake, just hitting return was my biggest pain in the butt for a little while.
Oh God, yeah.
Remember when
return was posting?
Yeah, return was posting. I was like, why would you do that?
Well, this. Or, looks like it's going to be a much simpler layout that Google has. It actually looks...
Did you hear what happened today? They stopped their...
They had so many people interested in it that it shut down the invites.
Which I think is bad, because it basically shows that Google's not quite ready to step into this arena.
Well, no.
It was like a invite-only beta test.
It's a beta test, and so, right.
I think what they were expecting was, it would take a week to fill up the slots we have.
Right.
But it took like a half a day to fill up the slots.
Right.
So,
right.
But that's the key to social networks.
Yeah.
It doesn't work unless there's a zillion people on there.
Yeah.
That's the only... So this is looking good maybe for them.
Yeah.
But when was the last time you went on any of Google's things? Great. You know what? They've got this whole interface thing locked down. I love Google designs and Google. All their shit's a mess.
True.
I would be very curious if they suddenly came up with something that looked great.
Yeah, I don't know. This looked great. I mean,
I do use Chrome.
When you
that's my browser, and it's fantastic.
When you want to organize your people, it's drag and drop. Drag them into the... They call it circles. You drag them into the circle, and I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really...
Can you put them in multiple circles?
You can put them in multiple circles. You can also use your multiple circles to do straight into GTalk. So you can do voice chat, or you can do online chat, or you can do video chat with multiple parties.
I hope they just let you import your entire profile from Facebook.
That would be their... If they could figure that out, that would be the biggest thing for them.
No way. Well, I just noticed that Mark Zuckerberg was on it this morning. They had Mark Zuckerberg is actually a member of Google Plus, and he has the most unamused picture of himself in the entire world. Seriously looks like no, it's not going to work, guys.
Well, you're right. Google has been wanting to do this, and I'm curious to see, because you have to convince half the world
to switch. Yeah.
And now Facebook did that with MySpace. But it wasn't a half a world at the time.
But Facebook also did it by making it basically a program that was much more user-friendly.
Yep.
And if Google can succeed...
You know why I think Facebook... here's my theory why Facebook drew everybody over. That Scrabble game. Scrabble-licious.
Or Farmville?
Scrabble-less and Farmville was, I think, the reason why everybody went...
Actually, you know what? That's kind of true, because actually the reason why I went on was that stupid wrestling game.
Yeah,
I originally joined Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember.
That's what got you there?
It was a stupid wrestling game that I thought was so cool.
I think that Google needs to tie in some type of gaming
the stupid vampire thing. The stupid like I would bite people and they would bite. Yeah, that's what
the
got
vampire,
me into.
The vampire pokes.
Yeah.
That's
what I never got understood me that. It was like the poking thing.
Yeah.
I never got to begin with. And then when they started coming up with entire games that were basically poking people with a zombie mask on,
yeah.
I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. I came to that realization literally like, a 12-year-old thumbsucker looking at themselves in the mirror, like, why the hell am I doing this?
That actually launched this whole thing in the game designer community of there are these self-admitted elitists among the game designer communities that were looking at Facebook games going, these are not games. Just turning our nose up at them.
Right.
Thinking like, this couldn't... Farmville? Who's going to play this? Honestly, really? Come on. And then they're blowing us out of the water.
Right.
You know, the Facebook phenomenon has blown a lot of game designers straight out of the water on this stuff. It's forcing us to re-examine what is a game.
Well, Zynga is now the second biggest video game company under Activision.
Yep.
Zynga?
Surpassing like EA.
What did Zynga make?
Farmville.
Farmville? Oh, geez, yeah. Really?
What Zynga does that I find fascinating is they go out, they identify other games, Facebook games that other lesser known companies have made, and then perfect them, release the clone, and like Farmville is a clone.
Wow. Yeah, so is Angry Birds. Remember that game we played the version of Angry Birds like a year before it came out, which was those throwing the catapult rocks and knocking the castle over.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then a year later, Angry Birds comes out and makes $100 billion, and they just perfected it.
Hmm. Matt and I were walking down through
Little Tokyo
the other day, and inside one of the stores, they had these big, giant,
plushy.
Stuffed, Angry Bird toys.
Right. I so wanted to throw one at Peter and take a picture of it.
Right, an Angry Bird board
but he,
game.
But he would have had to have a pig mask on. You got anything, Don?
No.
What accents should robots have?
Mine.
Well, there was a research study that just wanted to, they put a British, American, and New Zealand voice on these this computer,
yeah,
and then ask people like what they thought about it. It's kind of interesting. I'll post the article, but essentially they're like, well, we don't know which one we prefer necessarily, but they did think that the UK one was less robotic sounding and the American was more robotic sounding.
Interesting. But were they robotic representations of voices, or were they people doing?
There was a robot with, you know, with was read along.
Hello, okay, so it's like Matt. A, so it's Yang, like a Mac King.
Voice. Yeah, like so a Mac.
Like
voice.
A Mac voice.
Okay. But exactly. The question I have is, who was that tested on? You know,
I think it was a variety of different nationalities.
Okay.
So it wasn't just a whole bunch of Americans going, I don't sound right.
The reason that we accept that is because everyone imagines butlers as being British, and butlers are there to serve you, and computers are there to serve you.
This
you
is the thing? Picture that they had, well, of C-3PO.
Yeah. Man, if I could get C-3PO human-cyborg relations, I would be freaking happy. I would love to have a C-3PO around.
Yeah. Really? That's kind of...
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
We're doomed.
Yeah, because I'm not shooting them with anything. I just want them to go talk to the moisture evaporators. I'm totally cool.
As cool as I think R2-D2 is, like those high-pitched beeps and squeals are going to hurt your ears.
He's
going
to piss me off after a while. Yeah.
And then as soon as he tries to launch those rockets, I'll just start screaming at him, you don't have those!
Look, so. And on top of that, it's a computer. They can learn my language faster than I can learn theirs. All right? That's all I got to say.
0-1-1-0-0-0-1-1-1-0-0-0.
That's rude.
Have you tried?
That's my accent.
Have you seen good voice recognition software anywhere?
Well, yeah, the Dragon Dictate is pretty decent.
Yeah, pretty decent.
Every time I make a phone call.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you do?
Call Matt Yang King. Yeah, calling Matt Yang King.
Yeah,
I do that, and she's like, you know, call Matt Yang King. Calling Mary blah blah. No, call Matt Yang King. Calling Mary Seven. Like, no,
I hate that.
By the way, you know, Apple, I think, bought Siri. The company does that voice-activated butler thing on the iPhone, which is actually pretty good. And the rumor is that Apple's working their butts off to get their iPhones and their iPads to be able to understand you, to take notes.
Well, the iPhone Google app is pretty damn good.
It's pretty damn good. Dragon Diction is kind of the best one.
Yeah.
And the rumor was that Apple was going to try to buy them. I don't know if they're going to or not. All right.
So we've got a drug that reverses accelerated aging in human cells.
What?
Accelerated aging, not normal aging. Accelerated aging.
Actually, the drug rapamycin has been found to reverse the effects of Hutchinson-Gilford progeria syndrome. Right. The accelerated. Right. A fatal genetic disease that resembles rapid aging in cells taken from patients with the disease. Rapamycin, an immunosuppressant drug used to prevent rejection of transplanted organs, has already been shown to extend lifespan in healthy mice.
Mm-hmm.
In healthy mice, so not with progeria. So
researchers. But it also says in the article that they haven't done it on humans or anything else other than mice.
Well, they've done it on progeria.
Oh, you don't think that those scientists have been injecting that shit into their own bodies?
It's an immunosuppressant, so I don't think they've been doing that.
Researchers hope the findings will provide new insight into treating progeria as well as other age-related diseases.
I can live forever as long as I'm in a bubble. You know?
Well, we kind of already are.
So I saw this thing on the internet that said 20 upcoming movies for 2012. Mm-hmm. And I started looking through it.
And 4-2 for 2013. Yeah.
And it was really disappointing because... Not that I wasn't looking forward to a lot of these things, but, okay, going through. Mad Max Fury Road. Okay, well, it's based on the Mad Max franchise, right?
Does that have Charlize Theron as Mad Max?
No. What? Really?
There was a rumor going around they were casting a woman.
No, it doesn't. Okay. It's got British actor Tom Hardy.
Mad Maxine. It's called Tank Girl.
Yeah. They've got Lincoln which you know that's different.
They just brought in,
but that's Lincoln. You know, the Bourne Legacy. That's based on the Bourne franchise.
As long as it's not Vin Diesel as Lincoln.
The Wolverine, based on Wolverine.
Again,
Bond 23, based on Bond. Superman Man of Steel, based on Superman. The Hunger Games, based on a book that just came out.
Right.
Let's see. American Reunion, the American Pie franchise. Clash of the Titans 2.
What?
Clash, how do you do Clash of the Titans 2?
Yeah. It's called Wrath of the Titans. a decade after his heroic defeat of the monstrous Kraken, Perseus, the demigod son of Zeus, is attempting to live a quieter life as a village fisherman and the sole parent to his 10-year-old son, Helios.
Oh, God.
Meanwhile, the struggle for supremacy rages between the gods and the Titans. Dangerously weakened by humanity's lack of devotion, the gods are losing control of their imprisoned Titans and their ferocious leader, Cronos, father of the long-ruling brother Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon.
So it's like God of War 3. Yeah.
Let's just flush it all down the toilet.
Or God of War 2. God of War 2.
So, yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah, They will hear the interview
Zeus,
with Joseph.
Zeus gets captured, and Perseus has got to go save Zeus. Prometheus, which sounds kind of really interesting.
That's the Ridley Scott prequel to Alien.
Prequel to Alien. It's written by Damon Lindelof of Lost fam. And it sounds really interesting. It explains how that ship got there, basically.
Okay.
Total Recall remake.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we didn't know something working.
Men in Black 3 series. The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. Batman.
Hobbits 2012.
Dark Knight Rises. Okay. The Avengers.
Wow, there's nothing that's an original IP.
That's my point.
Well, yeah. But...
Battleship, based off Battleship, the game. Underworld 4 and The Amazing Spider-Man.
Not off of actual battleships.
Okay. I'm curious how many things like Moon and stuff are going to sneak in without this guy knowing.
I'm not saying that those aren't going to happen. They're going to happen. We're going to see things, you know, look at the movies that were made this year. But what's disappointing is that, like, all 20 movies that this person picked to look at, not one of them was just a screenplay that someone said, dude, let me write a great screenplay.
At least there's only one stupid toy.
Well, it's because the money, I can tell you right now, in the video game industry, nobody wants to make an original IP.
I know.
They only want to base things off of things that have a track record of any kind. Even if it's a bad track record, they want something to build off of. And the weird thing is, I'm watching it happen in every area. Every area wants to be doing something that another area has done first. So the entire entertainment industry just seems to be becoming increasingly incestuous. Of all the titles I have coming out next year, I have one original IP.
Wow.
One.
How many titles do you have coming?
I think I have 8 in the works right now.
Wow.
So, you know, it's insane.
Well,
it's insane.
From there, that is a perfect jumping point to Josephine Angelini, who wrote Starcross.
Something original.
Something.
Well, kind
original.
Of.
Oh, I will beat you with my iPhone if you talk bad about our guest.
I'm saying it's based off of existing...
Yeah, I know.
Well, yeah, but it's 2,000 years old.
Excellent. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Geek and Geekling, Josephine Angelini!
Welcome to our $1 million recording studio here in the heart of Hollywood.
Oh, yes. Gorgeous.
Studio audience number.
Yeah, studio audience.
No, you guys have this place rocked out with some pretty heavy equipment. That's
a
gigantic television.
It is. Isn't that a gigantic television?
I'm afraid of it.
It didn't look that big in Best Buy next to all the other ones.
Weird. It didn't look big in the airplane hangar.
It didn't look
here.
Big.
I do have this vision of like an earthquake happening and having to come by here to like pry the TV set off of you.
Yeah, my body will be in front of them.
Yeah.
Almost definitely. You'd just be connecting. Yeah.
You're just going to see a hand with a Wiimote sticking out from underneath.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you had to say it.
I have to say what now?
My name is
Josephine. Oh, my name is Josephine Angelini, but you can call me Josie.
And?
Angelini.
You are a?
No.
And you
are a?
Oh, I am a writer. I'm an author.
And,
I'm a debut author.
And
a female.
Starts with a G.
And a geek.
There we are.
Wow, you see, some of us are still in the closet about it. It's hard to admit. It's hard to voice the word at times.
No, I'm just slow. It takes me a while to catch on. No.
All right, so Josie's coming out with this book. It's called Starcrossed.
That's right.
Awesome. I have not read it yet, but okay.
Damn you.
Now I'm going to read praise just for a second. I'm going to blow smoke.
Okay.
All right. So this is the LA Times. LA Times said Dreamless, which is the second book.
Yes.
You already wrote a second book.
I already wrote the second book. I work fast, man. No, well, I...
That's crazy.
No, I outlined all three books before I started writing the first one. Like, I knew...
So it's a trilogy.
Yeah, awesome. I knew what I wanted to write.
Can we give your number to some other authors and maybe you can encourage them?
Seriously. George R. R. Martin needs your number.
It took me 5 years to finish one
just
book.
Just to get some Tony Robbins motivation from you. All right. Dreamless is slated for May 2012. This is the LA Times again. Not soon enough as far as I'm concerned. I haven't wanted a second book so much since The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Angelini weaves mythology and everyday high school life into a tangled fantasy of star-crossed lovers. The riveting plot twists and turns as the myth's destiny translates into present-day terrors, dreams, and hopelessness, and its execution is seamless. That's Booklist Review. I don't see a bad review.
Well, that's because that's my website.
Oh, I only put the good ones.
No, I've been very fortunate. I've gotten some amazing reviews. So
wow.
You know,
well,
of course,
so we know how this works, and you don't have to be specific. Mm-hmm. But is television or film contacted you first?
Film. There's been a lot of interest in film, but I don't want to make a movie right now. I'm focused on these books. It's sort of like you know. I think that what they do is they just buy up properties type of thing.
Right. They want their first,
job.
They hold it.
And that's, I don't know. This is my trilogy and I don't really see it as a property for somebody else to own yet. So
Okay. Would you mind giving us sort of the overview of the trilogy for our listeners who aren't familiar with
the wiki notes?
The wiki notes. Oh, do you have them?
No.
Well, it's a modern day retelling of the Iliad, and it's set in high school. Basically, with the first book especially, I sort of blend Romeo and Juliet and the Iliad. So I take that and some of the Oresteia. So I bring in like the Curse of the Furies, and the whole idea of kin killing brings on the Furies, and the Furies have set the descendants of the Trojan War against each other. So they're still fighting to this day, and they're still descended from the gods, and they still have all these powers. But the powers are getting stronger, and it's getting more mixed up with every generation. So, it's set in high school. It's like basically gods in high school.
I wish our listeners could see us right now, just to see Matt glowing.
Oh yes, I'm like
you had him at Iliad.
You did. Yeah. You really did have me at Iliad.
I love that.
And
story.
Why did you pick this theme and what made you think of this? I mean, what was your... Do you have a point of view behind this specifically? Or did you just like
sort
the...
Of. I mean, I don't have a message. I'm not... but there's a lot of stuff
Is
that
it Mormon?
Think...
No. I'm just...
Not at all.
No, I'm just saying.
I don't have like any kind of philosophy that I'm trying to nail people over the head with. It's just sort of... I've studied classical theater in college. I went to NYU with Matt.
Yeah.
And I was always really intrigued by the super bloody plays like Medea and, Oedipus Rex and people tearing their eyes out and, killing their children. And it's just like there are a lot of really heavy ideas. No, that was super
Los Angeles
heavy.
Wasn't enough drama
And
for
honestly,
you.
I mean, who hasn't gone through high school and felt like all of those events are happening to them?
Exactly. True. The whole like wanting to kill somebody, that happens to all of us. But
traffic.
And so I was always interested by those themes and I felt like I understood it well enough to tell a good story. And also the Iliad's one of those stories that doesn't get told very much. It's not in any modern retellings. And that's because it's kind of hard to justify to people that fall in love and start a war. It's like a really difficult setup. And it's sort of like, well, you hate Paris and Helen for that. So I had to sort of come up with my own mythology that makes sense within the mythology of the Iliad to sort of make it that the fates make this stuff happen. And it's sort of that no-win situation where everybody is not too happy about what's happening to them, but they really don't ever, the road you take to escape your fate is where you find your fate. So it's that Oedipus.
Say that again.
The road you take to escape your fate is where your fate finds you.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
You look all pensive now.
I know. I'm just going to think about it for about the next half hour. I'll be quiet.
I just wanted to back my characters into a corner. And, you know, it starts off with them like, I'd never do that. I'd never do that. You know, famous last words. Mm-hmm. You know, I would never run off with a woman and start a 10-year war. And then he meets Helen, you know, and he's like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just did
so
that to
what? What was the inceptive idea? Well, I mean, where were you going that you were like, oh my God, suddenly got this story to tell? Or were you just reading the Iliad one day and it went bang?
Honestly, you know how many plays we had to buy?
Right, yeah, it was ridiculous.
And so you have like that huge, the Riverside anthology.
Because you couldn't, so you couldn't cheat it.
Seriously. So you had like the Riverside anthology, but then like you could never work out of it. So you always bought like the individual Shakespeare
ones.
Right.
Which
so
sucked.
Because they were super tiny.
Shakespeare
and, you're like,
and Company.
Exactly. Spent most of my life there. All of my money there. And I saw a copy of Romeo and Juliet right next to the Iliad on my bookshelf, like literally next to each other. And I looked at my husband and I said, has anyone tried to do a modern day retelling of the Iliad with the Romeo and Juliet element of these two lovers should not be together, and did it in high school, like modern day? And he was like, nope.
I would love to take two books off of my shelf that are right next to each other and see if you could come up with a mashup.
Oh my God, no.
All right, wait, hang on. I got to do it.
No, this is serious. That was like, oh,
Watchmen
one
and Carl Sagan's Cosmos.
I love Carl Sagan's Cosmos. Okay, well,
Watchmen and Carl Sagan's Cosmos. Go. Book story, go.
Are you kidding?
No, go.
Carl Sagan would definitely have to be Dr. Manhattan. In the, like,
okay.
Without question. You get to keep your geek card. That's very nice.
Oh, man.
Watchmen's awesome.
Oh, funny.
Now I'm just picturing Dr. Manhattan going billions and
billions, billions and billions, billions of stars,
I'm telling
which
you,
I could destroy.
When I was a little girl, I couldn't decide if I was more in love with Carl Sagan or Jacques Cousteau. Like, one was like that super underwater scientist, and the other one was just super soothing. Like, and the universe goes on forever.
You know, I just found out that was all pot.
It was all pot. Was he stoned the
whole
time?
Oh my God! Yeah, and his wife is still an advocate for decriminalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't necessarily mean you smoke a lot. Just
some of us need a little assistance in conceptualizing the vastness of the universe.
Absolutely,
yeah. No,
true, you know, true. The funny thing I've been doing lately, speaking of Carl Sagan, is everybody's reimagining his essentially poetry. I still think he's my favorite poet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're putting it to music, and there's all these great YouTube videos. NASA did a whole series,
right?
But people are hand animating like these beautiful, animated little shorts to his
work,
his poems,
right?
And they're all over, you know, Vimeo and YouTube. And I've just been sitting there like night after night,
just
clicking on, you know, Pale Blue Dots and all these other, you know, great poems.
Oh, man.
That's true. Pale Blue Dot really is kind of a good poem, isn't it?
It's awesome.
Is that the one where he talks about the light hitting Earth in that lucky photograph?
No.
A Voyager turning around?
Maybe. But he's talking about how, you know, essentially how it is just so egotistical to think that this little speck that's floating, you know, aimlessly around in this other speck is the center of the universe.
True.
And that we're the only people here
with
wars and death and love and all that stuff. And that
well,
we are not.
How else could you think about that except high school?
Nice segue, man.
Exactly.
Wow.
Like, yeah, got it right back.
Well, okay. I definitely want to get back to your books and also fans and stuff.
So who's this woman who said Josephine Angelini meet the next J.K. Rowling?
Oh, you gotta stop saying that. That's
I'm sorry.
Crazy
it's right.
Talk.
It's like I pulled. A, I
no,
wrote your name into Google, and it's the fifth one.
I can't believe that. It's look.
Okay, so tell me about.
Unbelievably flattered that anyone would say that.
Right.
But it's one of those things where you're setting yourself up to fail. Like that's just one of those things that you can't. You can't. She has a theme park. I mean, I'm not even going anywhere near that. You know, it's. It's a lot of hype, and I don't.
What do
I don't
you think
it.
About her books? Not necessarily like, I like Harry Potter or I don't like Harry Potter. But what do you think about her books in terms of the cultural phenomena of them and what that means by comparing you to it?
There are a lot of things about it. Like I devoured all of those books, like one right after the other, and I like practically memorized them because there's a charm to them. There's it's not always safe, but there is like a really safe feeling that you get when you read her books. It's kind of like,
oh, totally agree.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And it's super attractive, especially when you're like, oh, it's snowing out. Where's Harry? You know what I mean?
It's like slightly dangerous comfort food.
It really is. Hmm. Maybe a little fatty, maybe a little, yeah, but exactly. You just don't want to stop eating it. Yeah. So I've read all of those books like a dozen times. And there's just the idea of it being a cultural phenomenon is something that I mean, I guess you can't really see until a few generations pass.
Right.
It's sort of like with Disney, like we all grew up on Disney stuff, mm-hmm, and Mickey Mouse and all that. That was around for decades before. And this has only been around since the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it's sort of like, I think you just have to wait to see how long it lasts.
Yeah, I think like cultural changes occur like growing like a garden. Mm-hmm. You know, you plant these seeds and you have no idea which ones are going to come up, you know? Who knows? You may have planted some mighty seeds.
Well, it's interesting because I think something that's planted with good intention tends to do that. Yeah. Like I saw these old-timey newspaper ads from Anaheim. Mm-hmm. When I was down in Disney, and they were about the release of Disneyland, and it was touted by this newspaper as something that was specifically for children, to help them grow up to be wondrous, beautiful adults, and all of these things about intelligence and scientific exploration and like that. And I was like, wow, and what is in Disney's now the conglomerate? Right. So somebody's taken the dream and turned it on its head. So it's interesting to see where, and I think J.K. Rowling did the same thing with Harry Potter. You know, she had this beautiful initial idea, and now it's now becoming way bigger than she is.
Well, she's gotten kids to read books that are 800 pages and more.
That's true.
I mean, if anything, if that's the only thing that ever happens, that was
also
worth it.
They're also very imaginative books, too. And there's something that, I mean, I really like, especially with children's books, there's a lot more leeway. There are witches and wizards and there's dragons and there's so much more fantasy, mm-hmm, in the children's world, and it's accepted and it's cool. And then I don't know what happens when you get into high school. All of a sudden, like, you're a geek because you like reading about dragons. Like, right. What the hell's wrong with dragons? Well, you know?
You mentioned that, and that's really relevant. Is that in Shakespeare we see, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream, we see fairies
all over the place.
Hamlet, there's the ghost, and yet somehow now, if you have a ghost or a dragon or anything like that, your literature is frivolous.
Right, and it's like the Scottish play starts with three witches, and it's almost a part of every single one of his major tragedies, mm-hmm, and a lot of his comedies, and I don't understand where all of a sudden it was decided that fantastical elements meant that it wasn't literature anymore. It's kind of annoying.
Well, that's actually kind of the point of our discussion here, that we, in the tradition of our guests, we pick a topic that we want to talk about and explore, and this is something that you had mentioned. I thought it was interesting, although I don't know if I agree with it.
Really? Good.
If I'm to understand you, you believe that if you put these fantastical elements in there, that people don't take it seriously. Right. Was that the initial?
Well, okay. I'm a huge fan of China Mieville. Like, mm-hmm, I think he's a genius. Mm-hmm. And some of his books, like one of my favorites is The Scar. That will never get like a Pulitzer or anything, mm-hmm, like that. Not because it isn't a brilliant work and it has some of the most creative thinking I've ever seen. It's because it's, you know, about another planet, like another world. And, you know, mm-hmm, it's just never, mm-hmm, going to get the attention that it deserves. And his prose are fantastic. I mean, it's just beautifully written. So it's like, why wouldn't that be a part of literature?
I am a strong believer in your point, too. Like, one of my favorite writers is Terry Pratchett.
Right? I love Terry Pratchett.
Genius.
The Luggage is probably one of my favorite characters in anything. Like,
I love you right now.
Parrotwood. It's just awesome. And he follows Rincewind around. Rincewind keeps trying to kick it. They're like my favorite comedy duo, I swear.
But his writing is so thick with commentary on the real world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all satire. It really is. It's a real strong statement on religion.
Small gods. It's a tortoise that used to be like this, and then the comes down and he's like, when people stopped praying to him, he turned into like this little
tiny
tortoise.
Little guy. Yeah,
and he's like, well,
okay,
I'm
so
a god.
Which is light and funny until you start breaching the larger topic of it's you know, if faith creates the God, what happens when people stop believing in the God and start believing in the institution that represents the God? I mean, that's huge.
That's a huge thought.
And it's a question that I don't think can be addressed without wrapping a gigantic God being crammed into a small, elderly, one-eyed turtle.
Like, right.
This is a necessary vehicle.
A cranky one-eyed turtle, too. Very cranky.
Cranky one-eyed elderly turtle.
But you all know this writer, and you all... Right. So he's gotten attention, and he's...
He's still mostly unknown in the United States.
In England, he's very well known. He has a pretty big section at BNN. There are a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, he is a well-known sci-fi fantasy writer.
Right.
Right.
But when you I stand up with your point where if I hold up this book to the average person on the street and say, this book is a fantastic commentary on religion, and it's got dwarves.
Yeah.
And trolls. They're going to look at me cross-eyed and wander away.
I have a hard time getting through Terry Pratchett books.
Oh, really?
What is it about it? So what is it about it that basically...
It kind of has, I don't know...
That British humor.
It's got a...
Gets to you.
Well, my wife doesn't like Monty Python. That was almost a deal breaker. It was very close. And it's so funny, I say
Did
this.
She watched Blade Runner?
And she goes, it wasn't a deal Blade breaker. And I'm like, you don't know, honey. You don't like the parrot sketch.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, go ahead.
I don't think it's as clever and funny as I feel like I should be. Like, everyone's like, read this one first. It's, you know, hilarious. I'm like,
do you like Douglas Adams?
Really?
Did you like The Checker's Guide?
Actually, yeah.
So Douglas Adams
There's something kind of like Xena Princess Warrior humor about it.
Yeah,
like,
it's less jokey. Douglas Adams is less jokey than Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett is a little bit more punny, but I like that because I'm corny. I like punny.
But, okay,
but where's the line then? I mean, is Piers Anthony, you know, Piers...
Oh, I think it's hilarious.
Who I grew up on
the Isle of
absolutely
you.
Adored.
Me too.
Yeah, but then I...
You know it took me 2 years to get that?
It took you 2 years to get Isle of You?
He has a book called Isle of You.
I asked my big sister.
Really?
It was sitting on my shelf. Oh, I hadn't read it, and I was just walking by it over and over again. And I was like, I'm going to read that Xanth book eventually. And then I walked by, and I was like, I love you. Oh!
I get it. Yeah, the very funny.
It's a long time.
Or the nightmare.
Yes.
I am surprised that to this day there's never been a Terry Pratchett Piers Anthony movie.
Nothing.
There's been nothing based on his work.
Nothing.
And he was one of the most prolific writers when I was a teenager.
Still is.
Would be a really expensive film, so it would have to be more of an action, the film. I mean, if you think about it.
True,
like, just
but something like On a Pale Horse. On a Pale Horse would adapt very nicely.
Right.
Hey. Yeah.
But Aaron, why do you think it's legit?
Well, I'm wondering, I have a feeling that Shakespeare wasn't going to win any special awards. In fact, a lot of his plays were considered low class and low rent.
Oh, he wrote for the Queen. Twelfth Night was for the Queen. He got props in his day and
but
age.
But I think maybe.
But I would say he was more of a popular writer.
Yeah, he like Stephen King? Writer.
Like, even the Queen just wants to have fun once in
a while.
That's
true. And there was a lot of crotch scratching in his plays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, so how many years does it take for, you know...
Everybody had crabs. No,
it's true. Stefano completely has crabs.
It's the plays with crabs that got handed down for many generations.
For sure. Yeah.
But, I mean, we have Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. We might have a George R. R. Martin's. We've got Harry Potter's. We have
I got to come back to this. George R. R. Martin's The Game of Thrones on HBO is one of the more successful shows on that network right now.
Right.
I love it.
But every time I hear anyone describing it, it's always like, well, it's really more like a historical fiction. I mean, there's dragon, there's magic, but it's mostly historical fiction.
Right, like, they're trying to explain away the fantasy elements. Yeah. And it's like, no, there are giants out in, like, the above the wall. There's, you know, the Walking
White
Dead.
Walkers,
yeah, the White Walkers. That.
To be honest, I think part of it is that, and maybe I'm not sure if people have the same problem back in the day, but these days... Those things, like in Shakespeare, you can put a ghost in there, and people actually might even be scared because they probably believe that there could be ghosts right next door.
Sure.
These days, if you put a ghost in there, most people, they've never seen it. They pretty much believe that it doesn't happen. So it's usually a metaphor, or you have to really go, it's got to mean something.
So does that mean that
you blame it on the sophistication of the modern audience?
Yes, and I think we've just replaced it. I mean, we've got things like Inception that might be using the same... getting to the same place, but we're using different techniques to get there. We're using science.
So you replace science, you replace magic with science and it becomes okay.
Well, but does that mean that we believe that fantasy novels then are frivolous and sci-fi novels actually have relevance?
Right.
You know, is
it seems where's to that be the line? Case.
And where's the line? You know, is fit? I mean, there's how many adaptations of Philip K. Dick novels now? I mean, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah,
God bless. I mean, maybe it's because he's dead. But you know,
Philip I'm just K. saying Dick that can't. A ghost back in the day may have not been fantasy.
Well, no, but what's interesting is actually you go to
Oberon and Titania certainly were. I mean, there were fairies running around in the woods. And, true. I mean, that's what Midsummer Night's Dream is.
And you go to the old chapels and churches. I mean, you can even go to the cloisters in New York, and you can see the old nave of the church, and the centaurs and like that are built in there with all of the saints and everything like that. It's brilliant. They're weighted equally.
Oh, those pagans.
I'm going to put one idea out here for one of the reasons why I think this may be the case. Which is, over the past few generations, there's been more and more of a drive to divest yourself of your childhood as quickly as possible.
Oh, that's a really good point.
You know, you need to grow up quickly. You need to be a man. You need to be a woman. You need to be mature. Look at 12-year-olds, how they dress nowadays.
Like even lipstick, late, even hair, lately, and, though? Like,
I don't know what's going on.
Even lately?
Yeah, even lately.
With all the video games and guys being able to wear t-shirts, and then movie is pretty much a toy.
Good point. And you know, there's sort of
like man children are walking around like, you know.
Well, I think it's because the perception is you don't have to, like, there's a blowback against it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Mad Men where you're wearing suits and everyone's talking about molding and home ownership anymore.
But they were allowed to be kids while they were kids. Now we're told to grow up when we're kids, and so we're still kids when we're adults.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's like.
Is that the reason why you said it in the high school world, or did you just specifically wanted to write for a YA audience?
I wanted to write for a YA audience, but also they were teenagers.
YA meaning young adult. You know what I mean?
No, like, good point.
Paris and Helen were 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Like,
adult. I didn't know what YA was.
I always lose track of that. Tell you the truth, whenever I read the older classics, I always forget that they're considerably younger than what we think of as adults.
Right.
Now.
Romeo and Juliet were like 13 and 15. Yeah. They're kids. They really are. But
were they considered kids then, though?
No, because they had to get married and stuff like that.
And this always kind of proves my point, is that we baby people so late. I mean, I don't think I don't think we ask our kids to grow up any more than they did back in the day. We just, I think, change the way, you know, the focus in a way.
Well, if you're dying at 40, you know.
Right? 18 is 20
is middle age. You know, 15, you're...
Well, that, I don't even really think that happened. I mean, that was an average when babies were dying at 2, bringing the average down. There was old people.
Right.
You know, walking around.
True. No, somebody had said, it was an old literature that I was reading that said, if you lived past X age... Mm-hmm. You were considered made out of steel, basically, because you had survived plague and you had actually been born successfully.
So they were old people, you know. But, you know, people were getting married at 12 and they were, you know, having babies at 15.
When you're being pressured to have sex when you're 11 or 12 and you're being told, get a job, you're 15 years old, I'm not giving you an allowance anymore. The time for play is done.
I think
as soon
also,
as you're 10.
I see people getting babied all the way up to their goddamn 23.
Yeah, but what's their economic situation? The ones that are getting babied until they're 23. And what's the economic situation of the kids that are told at 13, 14, you got to get a job, kid. I mean, I had a job when I was 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I didn't particularly like it, but I did it anyway.
You got to do it if you want that spending money.
There is sort of like there's a socioeconomic divide that I think we're also talking about here too. Cause you know, there were lots of kids that I went to college with and they were like, oh, they'd never had a job. And they're like in their 20s and they'd never worked a job before in their life. And I was like lying about my age so I could babysit when I was 10 so I could make a little bit of extra cash, you know? So
I just
like,
wanted G.I. Joe's until my dad told me to go get a paper route.
Ugh.
Yeah,
he went the paper route.
It was like last year.
Yeah.
No, then you guys all agree that, that today a kid who is 14 has way more responsibility than in the 1940s in America, a kid at 14.
No, but I think they have a lot more exposure. Well,
I think
to the
he has
world.
A lot more. Go ahead, Joey.
A lot more exposure to the world. I think that there's a big difference between responsibility and the idea of being grown up. Like true responsibility, like, no, you have to work the farm or we'll all starve to death. That's one thing. And then there's the world sort of coming in and making you the idea of an adult, like we, that we have now because there's so much exposure.
It's almost like you're
I'm not
told,
saying it's a bad thing. It's just different. Right.
You're told to start acting like an adult without the perks.
Yeah, can you the you hills know? And stuff? Like, I mean, I don't really watch the, but you watch some of these shows for teenage kids, and these girls are walking around in like, I wouldn't wear that. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm a grown woman, and it's like.
Yeah, you know, people have been saying this for 2,000 years, right?
Well, right, I'm sure.
Like, this is nothing new.
Well,
I mean, they actually write it in Shakespeare.
I don't know about that. It may have been around for 2,000 years, but there's a big difference between 1940s and your exposure to sex and your idea of it and your dad's magazine that you find in a drawer and being able to click anything on the internet and follow that line of thought till you find absolute filth. And and you can find the level of human degradation is so much further and so much more accessible
just
now.
Just because information's out there. I mean, the world has changed. You know, there's like this idea that the world is cyclical and nothing ever changes. And maybe that's true for some of the big things. But I think that the way that people live now, like especially since the Industrial Revolution, has completely changed our lives. Like the agrarian lifestyle from 2,000 years ago is gone. And I grew up on a farm and I can say that it is gone. Like, so I think that the way that society structures itself, it's just, it doesn't really compare to how they were living in Shakespeare's age, because that was just such a different era. And also he was writing about noble people. You know, he wasn't writing about the serf that was hoeing turnips. You know what I mean? That was like, but I think the world definitely has changed a lot. And I think that especially
well,
in the
I
past
definitely believe it's
two
changed
decades,
as well, but
it's changed a lot.
I'm just wondering, you know, trying to relate this back to, you know, the top of literature and
well, in your books, how did you deal with getting into the mind of teenagers at, you know, nowadays?
Oh, I just wrote them like people.
Okay. You didn't feel the need to basically go in and I don't want to say pander, but that was the first word that came to my mind.
Uh-huh.
Well, like,
no,
for example,
I just wrote them as characters.
Mm-hmm. J.K. Rowling, for example, like since we brought her up earlier, in the first Harry Potter book, it is a very much younger Harry Potter than later on.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I guess were you taking age into account with your characters? Do you intend to as the books go on?
Helen, my main character, Helen, starts off, you know, very naive about a lot of things. And, you know, by the time you get to I just started writing the third book. By the time the third book opens, she's been through a lot. And she's not the same person. I'm not saying that, you know, that sweetness is totally gone, but she's not the same girl. And
but
it's only
it
been a couple of weeks.
Character or age that you're...
It's only been a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
It's about experience.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is... I'm trying to take it... I couldn't do it all in one day, like a Greek tragedy.
Right.
But I tried to... I definitely tried to
so
put it
like
in a very
accelerate
short period
things.
Of time.
Wow.
No, I know YA books often have a stronger female demographic than male.
Mm-hmm.
The Iliad, not famous for its huge variety of female characters.
There are a couple. They don't get a lot of play. I mean, you've got Cassandra, you've got Briseis, you've got, you know, there.
Who's Cassandra in your book? If you can say. Oh, really?
Yeah, for sure.
That's an easy
He's
name
got
to
the
transfer.
Know-it-all. Lucas has the know-it-all little sister.
Who nobody
she actually to. Is the or- she actually is an oracle. It's, nobody's
I told
nobody
you.
Brought that up yet.
I told you.
No.
Why
I
does
told
no one
you.
Listen to me?
Right. No. She's the same. It's complicated. There are all the characters from the Iliad are there,
so
and
you
I
didn't
used cross cast
any of them. For example,
no.
Kept the names.
Yeah, no, some I did, some I didn't.
Odysseus.
Some I did. No. I had to change his name. There are some that I needed to hide, like Achilles I needed to hide, and, you know, for plot reasons. And and then there are other ones where it's like, Hector is Hector. Let's just get it out there. You know what I mean? He's the big blonde dude that can kick everybody's ass and that you would follow till your legs fell off. You know what I mean? Like, that's Hector. And Helen is Helen. But there are lots of other characters that, for reasons inside the plot, I change their names to either hide them or because, like my Aeneas character, I had to actually, because of the plot, I had to actually bring more elements to his character. So he isn't just Aeneas from both the Iliad and, obviously, the Aeneid. But
right.
But that's for my
Now,
story.
When we were talking about at the gym about this over the course of years. Now... I kept on pestering you to read this book and that book and this book and book and this book. And you were always like, no, I'm writing.
Right.
Which I always found fascinating that you didn't want any outside influence to affect, to sort of be the food coloring in your water.
Right.
You know?
So what is your writing process, and what do you, you know, how do you get to that?
Well, I start with an outline. I'm really big about outlines, and it'll take me like a good month. I know, and then I break it down even further from, I work in a five-act structure, just like an ancient Greek play. And I break it down even further into beats, like screenwriters use. So it's basically every 2 to 3 pages, you get a new piece of information, either about the plot or about the character, or both, if I can pull it off. Like, I try to really make the characters grow with every bit of information that they get. So after I get all the beats down, I know exactly this happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens. And then I do a rough outline of the next book, and then I start writing my book. And once I start writing like that, I don't really want other influences in there. But while I'm editing a book, I'll totally read other books. Like, I'll read a book a day.
Did you dissect the Iliad and like that into that structure in order to do what
you need to do? The Iliad is an epic poem. It doesn't really, the narrative isn't a modern narrative. It doesn't work that way. We follow several different characters. Like, we follow Ajax the Greater. We follow Achilles in his tent. And it's sort of Achilles' story. It's sort of Hector's story. And it doesn't really have a point of view. It's just, this great hero met this great hero, and, you know, they slug it out, and then this god got pissed off and wanted to save this one. And there are a lot of players in the Iliad, and it doesn't follow like that modern one or two perspective that we think about nowadays.
Is that why you needed Romeo and Juliet?
To anchor it, yeah. But also because I wanted, well, first of all, I know Romeo and Juliet better than the Iliad, but I really wanted to focus on the love story. Like, what kind of love does it have to be to start a 10-year war? I mean, really, what was Homer getting at with that? You know, so that was a fascinating point for me.
So what do you think, you know, just to sort of cross our two topics, what do you think are some either YA novels or sci-fi fantasy novels that are missed in terms of being what you think is sort of high literature?
I thought The Golden Compass was like...
Really?
You didn't like it?
Completely missed me.
Completely missed
you. The film.
So on board. So
really?
On board. Yeah.
I mean, The Subtle Knife. Really? I read the whole series, The Subtle Knife. And I love the Subtle Knife. The Golden Compass, I thought, was a fine, good book.
The Subtle Knife is actually my favorite. I'm a book two girl. Like, I like the middle books. I really do. I like Empire Strikes Back. That's my favorite. Two Towers is my favorite out of all of them. Like, The Battle at Helm's Deep is my favorite. I think that's one of the best fight scenes ever. Yeah. Come on, that's awesome. So
that
I'm like
is a better book.
I like that in between space. I'm one of the. I'm really weird.
So do you like Act Two of the screenplay?
Act Two is always a little bumpy.
I was gonna say
the desert of
the desert. Like,
really? No, but I like middle books for some reason.
Well, do you like epics?
I love epics.
I find that a lot of people who are, like, I'm an epic enthusiast. I think a lot of people who like epics tend to like the second book because it feels like you're coming into a story and the story is continuing even as you leave. Like, it's just a piece of the whole.
You don't have to cut the cord and you're not on the third book. It's like, no.
It's also, I mean, I remember finishing my very first book series when I was a kid. The first series that came to a conclusive end.
Which
The Terran Wanderer books.
Prydain Chronicles.
Yeah. No, I haven't read them.
What?
I know.
The Black Cauldron.
Despite
what Disney did to it.
Yes.
You know? But when I got to that last book, I was literally reading the last 10 pages and I realized, oh God, I have to stretch this out. I will never see these characters again. There will never be another chapter ever. This is it.
Yeah.
And I was like crushed. Like something inside of me was just broken at that moment. And the epic enthusiasts, I think, tend to feel that way. Like, at the end of an epic, there's been so much. You've lived with them so much that it continues on.
That's so funny, because that's exactly how I felt about the Bulgaria, David Eddings.
Oh, sure.
Do you ever read that, David Eddings' books? It was
With me, it was more Anne McCaffrey, Marion Zimmer Bradley. Oh. I read all the girl stuff. Like, I read that chick feminist
Dragon
literature.
Dragon drums.
Oh, for sure.
I was just going to say, I think that...
wouldn't that be a perfect
trailer
for that?
She lost me with the fairy dragons.
The fairy dragons, yeah.
She lost me with the fairy dragons.
I ran out of... That series ran out of me pretty quickly, but when I was really young, are you kidding? Dragonflight, that was
sure. The thing is, she never really had Anne McCaffrey, and God bless her, I love her. She never really had one main character. She had like sort of
Yeah, you start with Lessa, Fëanor, Flar, and then we move on to Fëanor in another book.
But, it's sort of it was always certain weirs that she would stay but she never...
But when she was writing, there wasn't... We have like this really set formula for what a series is. And these are the characters that you follow, and we're going to stick with them. Like, we know that now. She was like wandering around in the dark, figuring it out for herself. True. Same with Marion Zimmer Bradley. It's like hit or miss with her early Dark Over books. Some of them stink.
That's and then the there one are that Ianthe is pushing me to read. The Dark Over books. Which I
think some of them stink, and some of them are great, in my opinion. And it's sort of like, they, but when you even ask her for a timeline, she's like, I don't know. And, she's, and then you're like, is this the Damon that you were writing about in, you know, like Sword of Aldonis? And she's like, I don't know.
Wow.
You know, she's like, I was just, this is the world.
These I like are, the name.
No, but she does have this really set mythology, and she's, I thought she was an incredible world builder. But
so George R. R. Martin described, two different types of authors. He said there are authors who are architects who basically have to know every single bit of the structure before they even lay one brick. And there are authors who are gardeners who basically, you know, plant seeds as they go and then they see it. I mean, he, you know, he talks about Tolkien being an architect and Tolkien having to have the entire Elven language before he wrote one word of Elven. Right. And him, where he writes, you know, words here and there, and people are like, so how do you say this? And he's like, I don't know.
I only wrote two words.
I only wrote four words in English. Exactly. So which would you say you are? Are you more of an architect or more of a gardener?
Oh God, that's such a sticky ground. I'm so bad at absolutes.
Or maybe you're a gardener.
I'm a garchitect. I'm so bad at absolutes. I'm one of those.
Right.
I really love getting my structure right, my plot right, my characters right. Do I need to know... And I do like to know the lay of the land before I go into it. That's why I chose Nantucket for the setting. Because
sounds architect-y. Like,
yeah. But, and I do write really extensive character bios. But if something comes up and I'm like, oh, that's a much better choice, like while I'm writing and I'll realize something, I'll try to find a way.
So you're not a slave to your blueprint.
I don't think you can. I don't think you should be. Because as you're writing, I think you learn more and more about what it is you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because with every single line you write, you have to get more and more specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're a slave to the blueprint, you can't write in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know,
But I do have a pretty tight blueprint.
Sounds like a confession.
It is. Sort of. I'm sorry.
I've said this before. That my second script that I wrote, I just started. It was like it's an adventure. So I just started writing, pretending like I was on the adventure with the people that I was with, which was completely opposite than the first one where I. Was like had everything mapped out. I knew exactly how it was going to end, where everything should be, and I like to do it. I liked it both ways, but there was something really fun going on an adventure because it's weird. It's almost like somebody was writing in front of me, and I was almost reading my what I was.
It's how, like your vision quest with
yeah.
with
it was
computer,
like there was a writer like just a billionth of a second in front of me somehow.
That's
telling
how
me
Stallone
the story.
Said he wrote Rocky, man. I mean,
oh, what a good movie.
I mean, he said he was just a few inches, you know.
But it's weird. It is interesting to see yourself, you know, discovering. Like, why wouldn't you have known that before you started writing? Like, oh my God, I just discovered this.
Right.
So what was
sometimes it comes together like that, and you'll have all the other elements, and you'll be like, no, like I have to do that in the third book. Or
did you ever
get
stuck?
Happens for later books. No, it's not stuck. It's I got overwhelmed at one point. Like, I was I was editing one book. I started promoting Starcrossed. I just finished Dreamless, and I was starting to edit it. And then I had to start writing the third book or else I'm not going to be done by my due date. And it was literally like, I didn't even know where my head
You're
was.
You're the next J.K. Rowling. Because, can't you tell him to screw off?
You can't stop saying that. You're killing me, man. You're just killing me. Oh, man. No, but it was, I got a little overwhelmed and I was seriously like, where am I? Like, what chapter is this? Where am I going? No. But I knew where I was going to end it before I started it. So.
Wow.
You mind if I ask a little bit of the business in how? So you write a book,
yeah,
and it's sitting on your desk or your computer, and a lot of people like this idea. So then, what do you do? I mean, there's so many crazy ways of actually getting people to read books, including these self-publish and uploading to Amazon, which a lot of people suggest don't do. But, like, how do you, what did you do?
I didn't do anything. I was so frightened. And my husband approached three different managers here in Los Angeles, and he sent, well, no, one was Gotham in New York, and he sent it to Tom Sawyer Entertainment, which, and she was, it was just luck. She never takes unsolicited manuscripts. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what the heck, you know? And she was like, I've got a few hours. She started reading it and she couldn't put it down. And that night she sent it to Molly Glick, who became my agent. And Molly read it that night. And then I woke up like a day later to a 7 o'clock in the morning phone call from my manager. And I had never even met her. And I was like, hello, who are you? She's like, we want to work with you. So I've got the best agent in New York for you. And I was literally like, okay, I'll do that then.
And so if you were going to go back in time and tell yourself what to do, you would normally say, get yourself an agent so you can submit.
Yeah.
I would say get yourself a good husband.
Right. Like, yeah. Marry well. Marry clever.
Marry clever.
I think in this day and age, with publishing being in such a weird spot and mm-hmm. a lot of the online stuff that's starting to come up, I mean, try to get an agent first.
Mm-hmm. Harder market, would you say? I mean, you don't really have a reference point, right?
None at all. I've been at this for a year now. I really don't know anything about it.
Wow.
My agent goes, you're going to do this. And I go, yes. Like, that sounds fantastic.
Best kind of client every agent wants. Yeah.
And I don't understand that.
Are you shying away from the movie side of it?
I just don't want to, you know, it just seems like every single property out there is getting bought up. And mm-hmm. there are very few movies that actually get made, and I don't want to give up my property until I know that I'm going to get a great movie, you know, if that's mm-hmm.
We've heard that before. Yeah. I mean, that's why yeah. are we bringing up George R. R. Martin like, you know, every 5 minutes here? But he
it's not
got
about the
out
money.
Of it because of that crap.
Right, and they could throw like tons of money at you, but if they're never going to make your movie,
yeah.
what's the point? It's sort of like they can yeah. sit on those rights forever. Mm-hmm. Forget it.
So it's like taking your pets out and shooting them in the back, you know, out in the back pasture, and you never get to see them again.
Right. It's like,
I like that.
I like that pet. Yeah. I wanted to keep it. It was so soft and furry.
That's because those people, all they think you want is the money.
And that's
so and you're like, not. No, yeah, exactly.
It's like, if I wanted money, I would have taken something other than theater in college. Yeah. It's like, that was never my intention from the start. Like, that wasn't the point. And I'm not going to make that the point ever. Mm-hmm. So. Wow. Oh, wait.
Yay. I have an artist. I'm so happy.
I don't know if I've succeeded in the creation of anything artistic just yet, but I'm
learning.
You
know what? I've never met an artist that felt satisfied with what they did that I felt I could respect.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, like honestly. Yeah.
Well, it also gives, I mean, I don't know if this is good or bad, but it gives you freedom to finish your three trilogy.
Right. Without somebody saying like, this is who we're casting for the first movie. And you're like trying to write the third book and you're like, what the?
And then someone might come along and look at all three and be able to make a clearer choice.
Ashton Kutcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Ashton Kutcher is Hector?
Is he still in high school?
Okay.
Yeah.
You get Uwe Boll to do it.
Uwe Boll, yeah, exactly.
To direct your movie.
But the big question does remain. Have you cast your books in your head?
No, I can't see them.
Oh,
anywhere.
Come on.
No. Honestly, like if this ever gets made, I've already talked about this with a ton of people. I want unknowns. Like I want to ruin their
lives.
That's not like,
happen. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
I know.
Do they anymore. Well, no, she can actually put off. Do they have superpowers?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So one of the things, no, this is what happened with Christopher Reeve is with Superman is that somebody, and this is why all of the Superman since then pretty much have been unknowns, is somebody originally for Superman was going to cast Robert Redford. Think about that. That's the worst casting choice for Superman. It's not even about the blonde.
That was 30 years ago.
You're going to look at him and think it's Robert Redford.
It's continued to happen.
Exactly.
You're right. Superman,
it's continued to happen
right.
over and over again. Because once you know who the character is,
you can't.
You know. And so I think you actually have a much better chance casting unknowns to actually see them doing magic because you've never seen that character before. And also when you put the beautiful high schooler up on screen, there is a lot more magic.
Did you keep a small role for yourself in the movie?
No, are you crazy? Nobody wants to see my ugly mug up there.
Yeah, right. No. Okay, we've already talked to Anne McCaffrey. Anne McCaffrey, God bless her. Brilliant writer.
Yeah.
God bless her. Don't turn and open the back page of the because that's not a pretty cover.
Yeah, it's like, oh! Yeah,
exactly. I love it when creators make cameos. Like, mm-hmm. I will never forget watching Dungeons and Dragons the movie, right? And in the special features, they have they say, look, Gary Gygax made an appearance. He's the guy who made Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. and so you in the foreground. You see Jeremy Irons just chewing the scenery, oh, right? God, you know, yeah. There will be dragons everywhere, lightning, thunder! And behind him, you just see Gary Gygax hanging out with a sort of mild grin on his face, like, looking at the lights, you know, like, dude, this is bizarre. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the outtakes from the Dungeons & Dragons movie?
Yes, I have.
Okay, why are you Jeremy... guys watching special features of one of the worst movies
it's
ever?
True. Because it's true. One of the worst movies
it's
ever.
And it's hilarious. There's this thing. Okay, first of all, Jeremy Irons is absolutely chewing the scenery in this film.
Every single line is delivered like, I would like a hamburger. With swords!
Yes, like five exclamation points after everything he says. And there's this moment in it. Jeremy fucking Irons, who can act as, he's amazing.
He's amazing.
Right? And he does this one line where he's like, and the dragons will come now! And as soon as they go cut, his arms go down. This look of despair.
He just glares at the director. He goes, I'll be in my trailer.
And he just turns and he walks off.
Oh my God.
It's just like, you can
hear... you say contractual obligation, boys and
exactly.
girls?
Exactly. Oh you can God. Hear in his head, like, just imagine? Get through the day. It's, what's my day rate? All right, that's fine.
Oh, that's awful.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
No, I saw like 5 seconds of it and I was like, oh God.
Marlon Wayans.
My eyes.
Like, it's one of the few movies I've ever seen where one of the leads gets killed and the audience cheers. You know, it's just like joy in the audience. It's great.
Your fans.
My fans.
In the day and age of Facebooks and Twitters and super interactivity blogs, how do you or do you keep in touch with your fans?
Yes, I tweet all the time. I've been on Facebook all the time. That's part of the reason it gets really overwhelming because, you know, you can't just put your book out there and trust your publisher to sell it for you. It's like people want interaction with the writer. And so.
And they want intimacy now, too. No, they do. They really want to be inside your life.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I tweet and I Facebook and I do stuff like that.
Do you draw a line? Do you say, this is my persona that I present into the Twitterverse and the Facebookverse, and this is the persona?
Or, I haven't really. I guess that's
or being
I
an actress,
about,
is there
or,
a.
I'm just sort of myself, man. Hmm. Can't fence me in.
Can't fence me in.
No, I mean, it.
And do you enjoy those things, or do you feel an obligation
no, it's really
to?
Cool. Especially with the YA market, are you crazy? There's like super excited teenage girls that are like, I love it. You know, and
how long has Starcross been
so
out now?
Positive. It's been out a week.
Wow.
A week tomorrow.
You're gonna have some crazy Comic-Con experiences coming up.
I hope so. Yeah. I want to go dressed up as Darth Vader, but my manager won't let me. I was like, it's always been my dream to go dressed as... And she's like, no.
Go dressed as... Have you seen the Darth Vader Hello Kitty version?
Oh my God, I've got to get my hands on that.
You would love it. It's a bright pink Darth Vader with just the Hello Kitty on the voice box in the front.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. I love it.
And otherwise, just perfect Hello Kittiness.
No, but wouldn't it be hilarious if I came up like... And I took my helmet off and I was like,
people
hey.
Would scream. Yeah. You would be like instant geek love all over you.
Yeah.
Well, Comic-Con is, you know, lately there's been a lot of like there's stuff for young teens and they have gone bonkers at Comic-Con.
Well,
so you're going to
have the Twilight
were kind of frightening.
It was fascinating talking with people there the day after the Twilight thing happened because it was like clash of the geek. Yeah. Geek schools.
The geek schools.
Yeah, it was like...
people who want to dislike it.
It was West Side Story at Comic-Con.
Yeah, and also there were all these sort of 18 to 20-year-old sophomoric geek boys who were very like, oh yeah, the Twihards all came in, and you know, they were doing that Twilight thing, and I guess it's fine. And then it was funny, because then Kevin Smith came out and talked about them, and he was like, you cannot diss... on 12-year-old girls who like vampires.
Right.
Because in 6 years, they will be 18-year-old who like vampires. That's
so wrong. Oh, what a clever man.
That's so wrong. And suddenly you saw a 19-20-year-old go, huh.
They'll get a warmer reception this year.
So, will you be there this year?
No, I don't think so. There was... There was some talk about it, but I don't
too,
know.
It's probably just too close to Comic-Con, maybe.
Well, too close to the release of the book,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
So
next,
what's,
I don't know what the
so
heck
what's
happened.
Next? what all goes next for Josie Angelini?
Well, I'm doing a little tour thing, a little book tour.
Okay, so what
where are some of your stops?
No, I don't have very many because I'm new. I'm new at this. I'm going to Mission Viejo on Thursday night, and then on Friday I'm going to be in Tempe, Arizona. Ooh. And on Saturday, I'm going to be in Lansing, Michigan, and I'm part of the Dark Days of Supernatural tour. HarperCollins.
The Dark Days of
Supernatural.
That sounds
yeah.
like GWAR. It sounds like the band GWAR.
You know the band GWAR?
I used to hang out with GWAR.
Oh, really? They come out in armor and they hit each other with fake swords and then heads roll off and they bleed blood all over the crowd.
What concerts are you going
no,
to?
No, these are GWAR. This is for teen girls. We don't do that. We don't cut each other's heads off. No, but it's a
well,
group
maybe
of
once
YA
a month.
Writers.
Only
and
one.
Oh. It's a whole group of writers that tour around together,
yeah,
so
yeah.
all the fans are all...
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's
got to
be
fun.
A lot of fun. And some bonding with your fellow authors.
Right, and some of us have gotten, like, Amy Plum, even though she and I are different days of the tour, which is so annoying. She and I are really good friends now, and it's great. It's a great way for us to start a community with other writers in our genre, and also, you know, hey, you liked my book, you might like my friend's book. She's mm-hmm. a very good writer, you know, just to introduce young readers to new material.
Hmm. What are some of the books...
Die For Me, the Amy Plum's book. She came up with a new monster called a Revenant. And basically what it is
cool
is it's a being that dies for someone and then they resurrect. But they have like this impulse to keep dying for people, to save them. Like they're the ones that run into the burning building and try to pull people out. And every time they die for someone, they go into like this hibernation stage, but they actually suffer through death every single time, but they can't stop themselves. It's really cool. And so they're like these zombie angels. It's awesome.
Was
that her original name for the monster? And then she was like, I gotta change that.
No, Revenant.
Zombie angels.
And there's
that's
like
not good.
It's really cool. It's just like this great idea that she came up with. And
we need another classic
YA type of monster.
Yeah, it's like
they're not really zombies though. They're not the living dead, but they're not like no heartbeat or anything.
Well,
like
I think
that's
even better. They're like really new.
I think what you mean though is like a new monster you can shoot in video games and not feel bad about yourself. No. Like you can only go so far with robots, zombies, and Nazis.
Yeah, Nazis will go on.
Robot
forever.
Zombie Nazis.
Yeah, we'll be killing Nazis
for hundreds of years. No, but it's like you know we need another vampire-y something.
Well, nobody's ever made
get on that, will you?
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
come on
yes,
now.
Yes. Let me get my pen.
Are you gonna do another book series after this, or are you gonna give yourself a break?
I have an idea for a series after this.
Awesome.
And it was actually an idea that I came up with before Starcrossed, but it was too complicated. So my husband was like, "No, you got to do something simpler for your first book. You're gonna drive me crazy while you're trying to outline it." So that was fun.
Yes, but this is future.
It's a Pratchett.
Future
is after.
Is but prayer. It is. It's still YA. It's still. Okay. It's about. It's actually that story is focused much more on. Well, very much like this story about a girl discovering her power and claiming it and deciding what the heck am I going to do with it? Like, you know.
But you're not going to be able to get to this until
after
two more books are written, right?
No, I only owe them one more.
Right. Okay. All right. So, may not have to wait too long.
About that trilogy idea.
So after having done two books, now easy to write a book, hard to write a book?
I think it's hard to outline a book, but it's easy to write it once you sit down and start doing it.
Wow.
But it's very hard to decide what you want and you know what's the story and how are you going to tell it. That's the hard part.
The idea.
Right.
Sure. Makes sense.
Excellent. Do we have anything else for Josie Angelini?
I think that's it. Do you have anything for us?
Any questions? Anything else you want to get out there?
Yeah, anything else you want to plug, promote?
What is your website?
Oh, it's josephineangelini.com.
Okay. Excellent.
And that points to all your Facebooks and your Twitters and everything points from that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Perfect.
Very cool.
Thank you, Josie Angelini.
Thanks for listening
to me, thank you.
Guys.
Thanks
it's
for
awesome.
Coming out.
Go read the book.
And come back.
Second book is...
Dreamless.
Yeah, you need to come back when you've got more, you know, maybe even the start of the next book.
Yeah.
For sure. I'd love to.
When we have little star hards outside.
Star hards.
outside. Then we'll...
And go to Comic-Con next year.
I want to go.
There's so many people. You would.
We'll show you around. You'll be in good hands.
Yeah. It'll be crazy for you.
Oh, just come with us. We'll show you.
I'll get the it's Hello nice. Kitty Darth Vader.
We'll show you where to get the pretzels. The pretzels are great. You'll love
them. Well, thank you very much. Excellent.
Awesome. Yay. Stupendous. Amazing. Fantastic. Astounding.
She was very nice.
She's pretty damn awesome, and the book is darn cool, and I showed up one day late to her book signing.
So you showed up.
I was like,
was she still there?
No.
Oh.
No.
The line was still around the block.
She said it was a lot of teen girls who I missed.
I need to write a damn teen book.
And reason for jail.
So glad that people can't see the expression on your face as you made that statement.
Now I have to put in the explicit.
However, the fact that the Twi moms who show up and they're
like want to rip off Jared Lautner's shirt.
If we had a bunch of 30 plus to 50 men doing that for any tween romance, they'd be arrested outside the theater.
I don't know. The guy's like 18, right? 19, 20, those actors.
He was 17.
He was 17.
Yeah, that's old enough. I mean, come on.
Wow.
It's true. He's like a...
The only reason why I'm going to let that slide is because when I was 17, I was just wishing someone would do that. So.
All right. And on that note... We've probably turned off most of our audience. Here.
We like to wait to the end to turn you off, so...
All right, well, now we've made your blood curl. Bye, everybody.